Okay, welcome back. Bernard Grover is back with us tonight. How are things in, what would we call this, Southeast Asia? Where? What would, I guess that's where you are, technically, right? Indonesia,
yeah,
Malaysia?
Southeast Asia. I'm in Indonesia, but Southeast Asia includes most of the southern mainland countries, Vietnam, Korea, Singapore, Laos.
How far away from you is Singapore?
Singapore, by flight, is 1 hour, so I'd say about
not far.
400, 500 miles.
Yeah, okay. All right. That's an interesting country. They all are, really. We don't hear, as you know, I think, we don't hear much about that part of the world here in any depth or detail. We just don't. We know the names, but the American media just is preoccupied with the Middle East, World War III, China, Russia, the NATO conflict, Zelensky.
Yeah.
We just don't hear about the rest of it. And the big kind of the big player down there, if you think about it, is the unaligned, I'm being careful, but the generally unaligned 1.3 billion people in India. That's a big player.
Oh, India is huge, and there's gobs of money flowing into and out of India. In fact, most of the foreign enterprises here in Indonesia are out of India. That includes everything from supermarkets to high-tech software, that kind of thing, animation. So between Hong Kong and India, I think those are the two main financial and business interests here.
Got it. Well, let me ask you this then, before we get into our general topic, voting.
Yeah.
Is Southeast Asia, is Asia beginning to generate more momentum in terms of global economic clout, geopolitically, and certainly in terms of dollars and whatever currencies are being played with there? But is the whole area picking up steam? East Asia, Southeast Asia.
Yeah, Southeast Asia, well, particularly China, of course, is a gorilla in the room. But Southeast Asia seems to be picking up. They have the ASEAN, which is 10 countries, and soon to include Timor-Leste, which is basically half an island between Indonesia and Australia.
Right. That's A-S-E-A-N, all caps, ASEAN.
Yeah, A-S-E-A-N. And that's kind of, it would be similar to the EU, though it's not a centralized governing body as the EU pretends to be. And really what's been going on this side is that the Chinese economy is in a nosedive. And that's affecting everybody around here. Because basically, the West uses China as a low-cost provider, and then China outsources to Southeast Asia as its low-cost provider. So it's a ripple-down effect, and with the Chinese economy faltering pretty severely, there's several things happening. One, it's affecting all the economies in Asia, but is offering an opportunity, I think, to Southeast Asia to step up and take more of a leadership position. Of course, Indonesia's been doing that for quite a while under the current president, Joko Widodo.
That's quite a name.
Yeah, well, he goes, his nickname is Jokowi, so that's what everybody calls him, but... He's been the president now for two terms, so 10 years, and his term.
Oh, you got 5 year terms there. All right.
Yeah, and he's finished next month. We have a new president coming in, Prabowo, which should be very interesting. We're all kind of sitting on pins and needles, wondering what the new administration will bring.
We don't know. There's no campaigning that at least purported to tell you what to expect.
Well, there of course was a 6-month campaign period. There's a legal limit on how long you can campaign.
Oh, I like that. I like that idea a lot.
Yes.
I would make it, I would make it 90 days. I know there'd be freedom of speech issues brought up, but just as a campaign season, 90 days is plenty. If you can't get your message across then, with debates and so forth, you know, why bother? Now, in Trump's first successful run, that campaign went on at least a year and a half, for
sure.
Goodness sakes.
Well, the alternative is Kamala Harris, who didn't campaign at all. So
you don't need to when you're so gifted.
Yeah, you have a strange choice here.
Yeah.
So I would think that we probably know less about Kamala than we do about Prabowo. Prabowo has been around a long time. He's a former general. He was in exile for a time. He was politically, a hot potato. And he returned and has run for president 3 times, finally winning
right.
The third time.
It'll
be interesting. He's actually the former brother-in-law of Suharto. So this is another reason why it should be very interesting.
Still in the family is still there then. Suharto was, for those of you who don't know, yeah, he was a legend for damn near half a century. A long time. I can't remember how long.
Yeah, 30 years.
A long time. Yeah. Yeah.
And that was a CIA coup that put him in power, so.
Gosh, what an unusual theme that is.
Yeah, can you imagine? In fact, if you've ever seen the movie The Year of Living Dangerously, with Mel Gibson and, not Susan Sarandon, but Sigourney Weaver. Mm-hmm. That's about the...
I never saw that one.
Yeah. It's quite good, actually, and very, very accurate about Indonesia, the culture and the lifestyles. Well worth a view.
Well, okay. When you're watching this travesty... that has been perpetrated here by the international globalists and the others. This country is a hulk of what it used to be. It's terrible. We're 39 days, I think, from the fake election. They've already made their decision long ago. Nothing is left to chance. Americans have never been, I'm not talking about people over 40, 45, most people under 45 just don't understand what this country was, what we've lost, what was taken away from us, what we have the potential, if we were left to our own devices, to somehow recover from and to reinstall those values. But it'll never happen. They're gone. These people, the younger people here, Bernard, have no idea of what they never experienced. How could they?
Right.
They just don't.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, of course, I was born in, 61, so I was kind of right on the tail end of the old America, where people were basically free, the federal government was,
yes,
you know, noisy, but it didn't have implications in your everyday life and even in your body, what with the vaccine mandates and what all.
Right.
But I'm very sad to see what's going on there, and especially because the electoral process has been so violated, and I think it's fairly obvious to anyone, you know. Of course, if you mention that the election process has been fraudulent for at least 8 years, you're immediately branded as a MAGA Trumpist, and
right.
It's like, well. It's not. It has nothing to do with the candidate. It has everything to do with the system, the process itself. You know, by way of example, we just had the presidential election here in February. The polling place is right across the street from my house. And voting starts at 7, and when everybody on the roll is voted, they shut the poll, which is usually around lunchtime, and they count the votes on the spot. They count them right there in the open.
Oh, what a fabulous idea.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you
count
know
them.
Exactly, you know, who won in your precinct. and then the votes are sent in for final tally. But it not only allows you to get an idea of, you know, what's going on instantly, but the other thing is that you can go and check the final count versus what you had live in front of you.
Got it.
So it's very hard to be fraudulent here. You know, you can't stuff a ballot box when we can check it immediately. So by the evening, I can do they don't certify the vote for at least a couple of weeks, but they post what they call the quick count. So by 8 p.m. or so, the quick count starts going up online. And this
what
is
what language is the what is your primary language spoken in Indonesia?
Indonesian. It's a form of Malay, which is the Malaysian language. There are actually 300 distinct languages in Indonesia.
I've heard something awful. That's incredible. That's a lot.
Yeah. It's essentially, you know, most of the major island groups here have their own cultures, a unique culture, unique languages. Javanese is actually one of the largest native languages in the world. I think it ranks number 7 or 8 in the world. Indonesia is about the same size as continental U.S. We have about 300 million people here. So in that respect, it's about the same size as the U.S., continental U.S., except 75% of it is water. But
talk about diversity. That would be loaded. I mean, you could go, basically, it sounds like Indonesia is an aggregation of dozens of different countries. Think about it, their own culture, their own language, their own traditions. Well, very interesting.
Well, it wasn't until independence in 1945 when all these islands were put together into a single entity. They, you know, for hundreds of years, they were divided up between the British, the Portuguese, the Spanish, and the Dutch. And at independence, they congealed as a nation. And interestingly, the language is mandated, so everybody has to speak Bahasa Indonesia, which is the primary language. And that's mandated by law, so you have to study that in school.
Right.
But everybody has their home language, you know, what they grew up speaking in their local region.
I like the 6-month campaign limit. I like that. That's music to my ears. I can't stand these drawn-out campaigns. Awful.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's a year and a half is absolutely insane. I understand the fact that you have 50 states and, 7 territories that you have to cover. But if Indonesia is basically the same size as the continental U.S., and they can do it in 6 months here and have an instant count by sundown on election day. You know, it's insane that the U.S. can't do this.
That's too much money in it. Advertising agencies, it's actually an economy unto itself. The American political election cycles are a totally different economy, and there's a whole raft of businesses that didn't they make it on the basis of the long campaigns. So, not a surprise. All right, well, so we've got an article. It's up in columnists. You can find it there on the left side, Bernard. And tell us about the article. This is interesting. A lot of Americans don't understand that Americans who are out of the country, for example, vote. There's a lot going on here. And tell me what the most important parts of the article were for.
Well, what I set up initially is that, you know, this is my 5th presidential cycle in a row that I've lived overseas. So I have a lot of experience with how elections are viewed and participated in by people overseas. And what I noticed was about 10 days ago, There was wall-to-wall saturation ads on YouTube and digital banner ads for this group called Center for U.S. Voters Abroad. And
that's something I've never heard of until your article.
Center for U.S. Voters Abroad. And it's actually two organizations. There's a 501c3, which is a foundation, and then there's a 501c4, which is the one that's doing all the advertising. And part of what got my interest was the fact that I've never seen anything like this. The ad campaign is nonstop, telling Americans they can vote from anywhere in the world. And for those of us who have lived overseas for any amount of time, you know that you can go down to the embassy or even go on the embassy website and get everything you need. You can register to vote, you'll get your ballot, whatever.
Right.
I lived overseas in 1980, and you could do it back then. It's not like any big mysterious thing. Back then, you could only vote for president. You couldn't vote in your state elections. It appears that that has changed now.
Foreign voters can only vote for the national elections.
Federal elections, right.
Until
which
now.
Which is only the president. Yeah.
Right.
What's not clear is whether or not any of this allows me to vote in my state elections. And this is...
What are you expecting? Allow this? Will they allow that this year?
That's what I'm wondering. I'm starting to go through the process now to find out what exactly I have access to. So when I get an actual ballot, I'll know... what I can vote for. In the past, in my experience, it's only been president, but it seems, because now you can tell them what state you lived in before you moved overseas, and that makes me think that you might be able to vote in statewide elections, like governor, senator, House of Representatives. So that's possible. I don't know for sure yet, but I will find out.
How many Americans vote in the federal election abroad? How many? What's the round
number?
That's
what I'm trying to find out. I can find out percentages. They say that 7.8% of eligible voters overseas voted in 2020.
So only 8% of all the eligible voters, American citizens overseas, bothered to vote in the mid-year at 2022.
Right.
Is that right?
Now, how many that is, I don't know. I would estimate there are probably in the range of a million citizens abroad.
Yeah.
It's not many. It's not as many as you might think. Most of it is military and their families, students abroad. And
let me try this out. We have about 350,000 American service personnel overseas. Mm-hmm. About that's individual soldiers, and that's not counting head of household soldiers with kids and wives and everything. So 350,000. That's when you add everybody else in, it's probably close to a million, I would say. It's certainly 750,000, three quarters, something like that.
Yeah, for every service member, let's say there's three people, wife and one child. So you're up to 900,000. Business people seconded to overseas offices can't be more than a few thousand, maybe 10,000 at most. And then students probably in the range of 20 or 30,000. So a million sounds like a fairly reasonable number.
I agree. So how are these votes transmitted from abroad? They don't actually mark a ballot and have those sent over here for counting, do they? Do you know how the process works?
Yeah, the registration process, in the past, you went down to the embassy and filled out a postcard. It's a standardized form. And you send that in, and when your registration is approved, then you can pick up a ballot at the embassy, which is a hand-marked standardized form. This year, it appears that you can also vote online. There seems to be a registration and a voting process via some sort of website.
Now that is something I don't mean to interrupt, but I've called attention to this very online voting concept for a long time, 20, 30 years. That's what they want to end up with. They'll tell you,
sure,
vote online. Your vote will be tallied instantaneously. You have nothing to worry about. And the totals will show up within minutes. Boom. Everyone votes.
Yeah.
Although I'll have to break it down in terms of time zones, I'm sure. But that would be a very easy concept to try to sell people, I think.
Well, everything that is taking over our lives is all sold to us as convenience.
Everything
is about convenience.
Yeah.
So if anything makes voting more convenient... You know, that was the whole sales job in 2020 for the mail-in ballots and the ballot boxes, the collection stations. You know, it's all about convenience. It makes life so much easier, as if, you know, there's any kind of major disruption to your life to go down to the polling place.
Right. I got it.
So it's
all right. Hold on, Bernard, just for a couple of minutes. I have to take a break and thank our sponsors who make this all possible. And we'll be right back with Bernard Grover from Indonesia next. Okay, welcome back. Talking with journalist Bernard Grover in Indonesia. So, we have a lot of Americans, you know, maybe a million, voting abroad. But it's done, you're saying now, it looks like online voting, which is where I think they do want to take this whole process.
Yeah, everything I've seen so far mentioned, you can get a form at the embassy or have one mailed to you, or you can do it by email. So that's the online part of it. And I don't know how that would work. You know, how do you verify somebody's email in terms of whether it belongs
anything can be hacked. It's the whole thing is silly, right? You know what I mean?
Well, what really concerns me about this CUSVA, it's a long name, but there appears to be some connection with Act Now, which is part of the Act Now coalition, which is part of the Act Now project, which is run by the UN. And what I can't find, and there doesn't seem to be any information about how this group is getting their funding. I've heard now from people in 7 different countries that are all seeing these ads. So this is a huge ad buy in the millions of dollars. Where's this money coming from? I went to Open Secrets, which is usually pretty good about listing amounts and sources of funding for NGOs and charities, and they have nothing. It's all zero. There's nothing on the group's website. They say we accept private donations, grants, and foundation funding, but they don't list any of the actual sources. And that's concerning.
Yeah, that should be. The whole idea of electronic internet voting, if we're worried about electronic voting machines, my God, if they shift it to the internet, all bets are off. The results will be whatever they want. There's no accountability. There's no counting. I think that's where it's going to end up.
Well, they can say,
anyway.
Well, we'll have digital certificates and all these security features, but that stops nothing.
Nothing.
But everything can be hacked. Everything.
Wow.
I mean, if you look at it,
that's what Noel
can be hacked.
Harari said that. He said humans are hackable.
Sure.
Yeah,
it's I don't know. It's very concerning how this is all moving towards this kind of vaporous cloud-based everything.
That's true.
Where you never actually have anything physical.
Uh-uh. I will not. They try to force you. I think most of you know I eventually bought an Apple iPhone, an iPhone 11, and I don't use it. I don't carry it with me. It stays on the desk. I just use it for very special calls once in a while, and it's a good thing to have. You can take pictures with it, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, the whole idea of electronic anything, cloud, the phone keeps telling me, you're out of storage, you've got to join the cloud, something like that. I don't want to join the cloud. I want nothing to do with the cloud. But they try and force it on you. Anyhow, I get your point, and it's a very good one. We live in a world where there is no privacy. There never will be any more privacy. It's over. It's gone. And if they want to know, they know. And they know more than you'd ever imagine. That's my guess at it right now.
Well, literally, the only way you can have privacy is to go completely cold on anything electronic. Including
anything, everything,
anything,
including new vehicles, which have GPS tracking and OnStar or whatever they are. It's all electronic. Hey, I remember opening the hood on a car, a truck, a car. It didn't matter, whatever. It was a car, and I looked under the hood. I was a kid, and what did I see? I saw a radiator, I saw a fan, I saw an engine block, I saw a valve cover, I saw a carburetor, I saw a fuel pump, and I saw a battery. And that was just about it.
Yeah.
All stuff you could work on.
My first car was a 53 Chevy Bel Air, and to work
on
the
beautiful
engine,
car.
I could literally stand inside the engine compartment and work on it.
I believe
you. And there were about six cables. Well, seven with the starter. And that was it. I mean, it was a straight six. It was a beautiful car.
That's all we ever needed.
A tank.
Bernard, we didn't know any more than that. We don't need all the electronic digital bells and whistles and comforts. It's garbage. No, those cars were the best. That was a 235 six-cylinder engine, probably, if you were looking at a six.
Straight six.
Great car. If you had that car now, if it was clean and nice, 20 grand, 15 to 20, easy.
Anyway. Oh, and it was a literal tank. You know, the dashboard was actually made of steel.
The thickness of steel. The thickness of the steel. That's right. I think they use, what do they use now? 16 or 18 gauge steel. 18 gauge, you can go up and tap on it with your knuckles and It's very, very thin. They used to use 14-gauge and 12-gauge in some areas of a car, and it was solid. That's how people survived crashes.
Oh, you can knock down an oak tree with that old Chevy.
Yeah. Yep.
The the thing is that all of those gizmos and gadgets were all sold as safety and comfort, safety and comfort.
Ah, yeah.
And
you ever
they all end up coming back to bite us.
They do. Do you ever see American cars driving around? Any old classics?
There are a few Fords, and Jeep is trying to make an entry right now.
No, I mean old ones, classic cars, classic American cars.
The only classic one I've seen here was an old Dodge pickup that used to sit up on the road into the mountains. And it was for sale, and then it disappeared one day, and I haven't seen it since. But that's the only classic I've ever seen.
Oh, you should have bought it. If you see it again,
I would have,
track it
down. Believe me. If I had the money, I would have bought it instantly.
That's funny. Sounds like some early 50s.
Yeah, it was, I think, if I'm not wrong, it was a 60 or 61. It had the old wraparound windows on the back of the cab.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Beautiful old truck, man. I would have, believe me, I would have snatched that up in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Well, the cars today, not interested. And trucks, what is it with, I don't know when they went to the, remember when they had the little extended cab on the truck and they had a little doorlet, half a door, and it had an inside handle and you could open it up and get behind the driver's seat? It was called a cab and a half or something. Now, and all of you know this, it looks like a motor vehicle. I mean, a regular sedan. It's got four doors and a short bed in the back. It looks like a car truck or a cruck. I don't know what you'd call it. But it doesn't look like a pickup truck. Pickup trucks are not supposed to have four doors. That's me.
Well, in the old days, we called those cowboy Cadillacs, you know, and that was the rodeo stars all drove.
Yeah, but
they
were two-door pickups. And then they went to the extended cab, which is okay. But with four doors on these pickup trucks? Wow. I don't know.
They're getting ridiculous. And the thing is that they're cutting away the bed, which is what makes the truck
worthwhile. Probably a 5-foot bed in some cases.
Yeah, you can't even get a sheet of plywood in there.
Yeah.
You know, the ones I'm used to are like the old Dodge extended bed that you could have
loaded. 8-footer. Yeah.
Yeah, you could have loaded all kinds of stuff in that thing. But you know, the thing is now with, especially here, there's this huge push for these electric vehicles, which is the most insane thing I've ever seen
in my
life.
They're dying. They're dying here. The Western world on this end is they know the scam now, and they're not buying them. They're absolutely useless trying to resell a used one. Nobody wants them. They're garbage. It's too bad that people are going along with the scam. We don't need anything more than what we have. Oh, they can't? Yeah. Oh, good news.
No,
good.
They're too expensive. I mean, we're talking about a country that just 10 years ago, private vehicle ownership was almost unheard of. And to own
all motorbikes
was a status symbol.
Yeah.
Everything's motorbike. Millions and millions of motorcycles here is absolutely insane. And
Harleys?
A lot of the delivery services now are going with these e-motors, and the drivers hate them. The e-motorcycles are just a huge annoyance. And
you see any Harleys there on the road?
And blind, and I can't hear or see these things coming, and it makes me really nervous.
No, they're too quiet. Do you see any Harleys there?
In fact, there's a couple of Harley enthusiast clubs. The go riding on weekends. And I know a couple of people that actually own them. But they're all fairly new. They're all within the past 20 years. There's no real classic Harleys here. The old hogs, you know, the real
hogs. That's fine. That's fine. The early 2000s are fine. Nothing wrong with those.
Yeah, well, those are good. They used to be great bikes. Anymore, I don't know that they're all that great. Certainly, since
they're pretty, good. I have an older one, 06, and it's just fine. Mm-hmm. It really made them nicely then. It's just like automobiles, though. The further back you go, the better they are built. But they're certainly not full of, you know. And seat warmers for your rear end in the winter, or whatever.
Yeah.
They have all kinds of things in cars now.
Well, I really can't stand anything that has more than a few spark plug wires and a battery cable. Beyond that, I don't think you really need all the computerized stuff.
You don't. No, you don't. No. No, it's crazy.
For me, sitting under a shade tree on Saturday afternoon with a cooler full of beer and a box full of tools, for my generation, that was the ultimate Saturday afternoon was just playing with your car.
Sure. No, I understand. Those cars that you could actually do things with. Anyhow, we had it, and they took it away from us. It's too bad. They didn't have to. They could have left us pretty much alone, and we were doing very well in the 50s and 60s in many ways.
Yeah.
But then, no more. Now they're going to take us to war. How does it look over there as far as the nuclear potential? We got Israel today using American planes and American bunker buster bombs, dropping them on apartment complexes. These are bunker busters Beirut, trying to wipe out the Hezbollah headquarters. That's what they're trying to do. There are a lot of underground facilities there, I guess. So multiple bunker busters. American weapons, American planes. We're fighting the war.
Yeah.
We're totally involved.
And that's what the U.S. is famous for, is starting and completely screwing up wars. And, of course, here, you know, with 200 Muslims, 200 million Muslims, Israel is not a very popular
200
topic.
Million Muslims, and that leaves 100 million what?
Buddhists, Hindus, Christians, Catholics.
There are only six
recognized religions. Uh-huh. Judaism is not one of them. In fact, I think there's only one synagogue in the entire country. But yeah, it's the largest population of Muslims in anywhere in the world. And it's ubiquitous. They're all over the place here. There are a couple of islands that are primarily Catholic, I would say. And then, of course, Bali is Hindu. But for the most part, it's Muslim everywhere.
I you know, every time I hear Muslim, I cringe, to be honest. Nothing against the people. It's the thought process. Any religion that could come up with and condone female genital mutilation is no religion in my view. And I'm sure it is unrestricted there. That's just the way they are. Here, it's being opposed, but I forget what Frosty said, something like 25,000 cases a year of FGM, something. And it's too many. One is too many. It's just crazy.
One is too many.
I don't get it.
But, I feel the same way about circumcision, which I consider male genitalia mutilation.
It is.
That's institutional in the U.S. now.
Right.
But certainly Judaism and Islam both promote it.
Well, what's really humorous about that is that all of those pictures that were used to promulgate the Holocaust, showing the piles of bodies, if you noticed, they don't do that anymore because the men in the piles were not circumcised.
Mm-hmm.
Whoops.
Mm-hmm.
Whoops.
Yeah, that's a little obvious. And in fact, my personal belief, I haven't found anything to prove this, but I believe the institutionalization of circumcision was to prevent identification of Jews in situations like that. If everybody is cut, then nobody is Jewish. Because there's really no biological or health-related issues that it was sold in the 50s as being more healthy, but that's completely fictitious. The Catholic Church promoted it because they believe that being circumcised prevented boys from fiddling around. But I think that's just ridiculous.
Do they even talk about FGM there? It's probably not even mentioned, be my guess.
I haven't really heard much about
that.
Yeah,
you won't. It's kind of one of those hidden horrors that just never get talked about. It's crazy.
Yeah.
All right. We have 5 minutes left. Well, I occupied a lot of this hour with just rambling around, but what do you want to put on the table here that we've missed? Anything important that we want to kind of highlight? coming out of your article, whatever, looking at the U.S., are people over there holding their breath looking at this mess? Do they
actually
watch?
Based on 2016 and 2020, the election this time around doesn't seem to have anybody's attention over here. People are primarily focused on, in Indonesia, on the new president coming in next month.
Right.
And outside of that, in a geopolitical sense, is everybody looking at China and the economy there. China is not the threat that is presented as in the U.S. They don't have the military infrastructure or the finances to really attack Taiwan. And they're afraid of it because there's suspicion that most of the chip-making plants in Taiwan are rigged to explode if they invade.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. Okay, let me ask you this. Do you see China trying? Or is it something that Taiwan is really almost impregnable? I can't imagine that the Chinese...
I don't think it's impregnable. You know, it's only 12 miles across the strait, so it's not really a major invasion. But what I see is Beijing taking more of a soft approach of trying to integrate Taiwan as a partner rather than trying to take it over. I think they realize that there's a huge geopolitical price to pay if they try an invasion. They're looking at Ukraine and seeing the issues with that. If the Middle East blows up, which it could, or Ukraine, then there's a good possibility that China may actually go for it. Because then there would be a three-front war, two-front war, and that would divide all the Western militaries into a bunch of pieces.
Right.
They're trying to jumpstart NATO over here, and they're doing it with something, what is it called, the Quads, New Zealand, Australia, U.S. and Canada, I think, and they're trying to create a military alliance called the Quads and then merge that with NATO, and that would be a truly bad idea, a very bad idea. But NATO is obviously being promoted as the new outlet. You know, all of this military spending is just money laundering. The U.S. is being looted, and that's clear. They've spent $25 trillion in the past 9 years. $25 trillion in 9 years. And that's insane. That's ridiculous.
Right.
From the start of the country until, 2009, the entire national debt was $9 trillion, and it's now $35. So that's 300% growth in 9 years is just absurd. But what all this is, and all the foreign aid and all of that, it gets laundered and cycled back into political pockets. If you notice, like with the cash aid to Ukraine, it all gets spent here. They have to buy U.S. munitions, so the money is actually going into corporate pockets, and then the corporations donate to the political campaigns, and it's all one big happy family. But the U.S. is clearly being looted, and I think EU is pretty much the same. All of these donations, all of this aid and support for Israel and for Ukraine, none of that's actually going to anything in Israel or Ukraine. It's all being cycled back. You know, there's a few bombs and some missiles and a plane or two to make it look like there's something going on. But the big potatoes are back here or back in the U.S. in political pockets.
Well, I just,
and the same with all these NGOs and everything. All of it is a money laundering scam.
Right. Right. Well, there are two economies, the visible economy and then their economy. It's a whole different realm.
Well, and the catchphrase, our democracy, that's what it's mm-hmm. referring to. Mm-hmm. It is not the people's democracy. It is our democracy, which is their own little closed group. And all of this is looting the public treasury. And to me, that is so clear.
I agree.
And so obvious. But no one seems to get that. They don't understand that it's all just flowing right back into people's pockets in Washington.
Sad, but totally true. All right, Bernard, thank you for the update. Always great to talk with you. You have a very valuable perspective for all of us to consider. So keep at it, and we'll see if we can get back together here fairly soon, before or after the selection on November 5th. We'll see how it plays
out.
Yeah,
that's going to be an interesting experience, I believe. And I think October is going to be a really strange month as well.
I agree. I do. I think so. All right, you take care. Be good.
Thank you. You too. Great to talk
to you. Okay, Bernard. Thanks. Bernard Grover. And good man. Okay, we're going to pause and come back with more in just a few minutes. Hold on.